This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Edvard Munch Museum in Oslo, Norway, reopened this morning, just days after two prize paintings were stolen in a dramatic heist. On Sunday, in broad daylight, armed, hooded thieves stormed past astonished tourists and ripped two of Munch's most famous works clean off the walls, then ran to a car outside and drove away. Though this particular theft was unusually brazen, art experts say this type of crime isn't all that unusual. Thieves swipe an estimated $5 billion worth of artwork every year. According to Interpol, that puts art crime fourth on the list after drugs, money laundering, and illegal arms trading. This flourishing felony also poses difficult issues for museums and galleries. In Paris, the Mona Lisa now sits behind thick protective glass, which can discourage tourists as well as thieves. And while the unarmed guards in Oslo could do nothing to stop Sunday's armed robbery, nobody wants a shootout in a museum. Later in the program, the military and medals, and we'll go to an Olympics watching party in Mexico City. Mexico's best chance for a medal comes later this hour. But first, art theft. If you buy or sell art, insure it, or maybe even if you steal it, give us a phone call. Is security too lax? Where's the profit in stealing something so recognizable? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to update us on the stolen Munch paintings is Rolev Sulholm, the chief editor of the Norway Post. He's with us by phone from his home just outside of Oslo. Thanks for being with us late in the evening there.
Good evening, sir.
Has anything been seen of either the paintings or the thieves since they drove away on Sunday?
No, I'm afraid not, except for the broken frames that the thieves left behind and the first getaway car.
So they switched cars?
That's what is most likely, yes.
And why, any speculation or any understanding, any ransom demands? Why do people think they stole these paintings, sir?
Well, that's the big question, of course, and theories range from tough guys trying to make a mark for themselves in certain circles to a tit-for-tat to the police for having fouled a bank robbery the other night. But, I mean, you know, this is just guesswork. I'm just kidding.
These paintings were, I gather, insured for flood and for fire, not for theft.
That's correct.
What's public reaction been like?
Well, you know, most people are shocked and saddened by this disaster, we might call it.
Disaster. Edvard Munch, it's hard to overrate his importance to people there in Norway.
Not only Norway. I think at least experts say these were some of the most well-known paintings world over.
There's been a lot of talk about the lack of security at the museum. As we mentioned, the Mona Lisa sits behind protected glass. These were just hanging on a wall. I gather the city of Oslo gave ½ a million crowns to the museum for security just a month ago.
Yes, but there hasn't been enough time to implement any major security efforts since then. So just a bit too late, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, these thieves were armed. Has there been discussion about, maybe now art museum guards need to be armed?
I don't think seriously, and I certainly hope not. I mean, our society has so far been blessed by having, most of us say, be able to go where we want and act as normal citizens. I certainly hope we don't have to have armed guards in front of an art gallery. But, of course, Mona Lisa, too, was unprotected the first time she was stolen.
And this is Munch painted several versions of his famous painting, The Scream. This is just one of them. Another one of them was stolen elsewhere not so long ago.
That's true.
Yeah. There had been talk of a reward offered for information leading to the recovery of the painting. I gather that's not likely anymore.
Well, actually, that was proposed, and the mayor turned it down, and so did the museum director. But since then, actually just a few hours ago, the police chief said it might be a solution to get things moving.
So it's still a possibility?
Yes, absolutely.
Rolev Sulholm, thanks very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Rolf Solholm, chief editor of the Norway Post. He was with us by phone from his home just outside of Oslo. Well, joining us now to tell us about more about the world of art thievery is Julian Radcliffe, chairman of the Art Loss Register, and he's with us from our bureau in New York. Thanks for joining us on Talk of the Nation today.
Nice to be here.
So as we heard in the introduction, art theft is the fourth largest criminal activity worldwide?
In terms of international criminal activity, that may well be the case. It may well be behind credit card fraud as well as the other types of crime you mentioned. And the figure of $5 billion is difficult to substantiate. It depends whether you include illegal archaeological digs and jewellery or whether you're trying to confine the figures to fine art.
Mm-hmm. And in a way it's distorted because some would argue the prices of some of that fine art is a little distorted as well.
That's right. People forget that items valued at £100 may well be art and antiques, not just items valued at 10 or 20 million.
Mm-hmm. In what part of the world does art theft seem to pose the biggest problem? And is it a bigger problem for museums like the Munch Museum in Norway there? Or is it most art stolen from, people's houses?
We register about 10,000 items a year, of which about 15% are stolen from museums in terms of number, but obviously a much higher proportion in terms of value. 30 to 40% from private houses, proportion from churches, and the rest from colleges and art dealers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So museums are a big proportion of the total.
And what to you explains why this seems to be such a big business?
Although it is difficult to sell on very high value and well-known pictures into the art trade at the end of the cycle between the criminals and getting them resold, it is not or has not been that difficult to sell items which might be worth, say, $100,000 or $200,000. But we have seen a change in the pattern. When we started, a large proportion of the recoveries were made from the major auction houses, and they were consigned there by criminals themselves. Now, the auction houses and the dealers, by checking with us and by improving their procedures, have reduced the number of items we find there.
Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Julian Radcliffe, and let's take a call from Katie, who's on the line from Davis, California.
Hi, good morning. I was curious, what happens to these pieces of art once they disappear from the museum? You may have just touched on that answer a little bit, but, these thieves can't hang this piece in their homes, or does it just get sold in the trade market, or what happens to them?
We're negotiating about 100 recoveries at any one time, and we've just been doing one in which there are about 300 objects held by a number of different gangs in one country. In all cases, these pictures are not hung. They're stored either in bank vaults or in people's private houses or in cellars, and they wait for the opportunity to put them back on the market, and they may wait 5 or 10 years to do that. This is very much a commercial criminal activity.
When you say we're negotiating for the return of these, people contact you and I say, I've got the Vermeer or whatever it is, and how much for $2 million you can have it back or whatever it is?
There is a great spectrum. On one side of the spectrum will be an informer calling us, and the police say that they're prepared for us to make a small payment to him for intelligence which may lead to recovery and also to prosecution of criminals. And we have agreements with the police about how much we can pay and a whole series of criteria govern that. At the other extreme, there may be a perfectly honest person who's bought an item without checking it with us. He tries to sell it. We identify it. He's a good faith purchaser, and we then try and get his money back from the person he paid, or it may be compromise the settlement with him.
Are there cases where insurance companies, these particular paintings in Norway were not insured for theft, but some paintings are, would the insurance company make a discreet payoff or a discreet return? Oh, it was found in the trunk of a car.
Very seldom will an insurance company pay what you might call a ransom, i.e. negotiate direct with the thieves for the return of the item. It is possible that in 20 years' time, when the police say we can't prosecute anybody anymore and the pictures have moved through 4 or 5 different people's possession, that a negotiation would take place, but only with police permission.
We hear cases, or I'm not sure we ever heard cases. We hear stories, whether they're true or not, I guess I'm going to ask you, of, you know, eccentric collectors who order something stolen to order. A man must have that Edvard Munch painting. He hangs it in a special gallery in his basement and just goes to visit it on special occasions.
That's a figment of James Bond's imagination. In all the thousands of recoveries we've done, we've only had two cases in which the items were being held by somebody who had no intent of reselling them. One was an individual in Switzerland who'd stolen from a number of local museums and had his house stuffed full of items, and another was a retired British mining engineer who died in Florida and turned out to have 40 or 50 stolen paintings, although we could only identify two or three of them.
Katie, thanks very much for the phone call.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go now to Mary. Mary's on the line with us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes, I was wondering why they're using the adjective priceless in regard to Munch. And for me, I know he's seminal in modern painting, and I wonder if you could talk about that and why, if he's so seminal in modern painting and, you know, I like him so much, why something so priceless would have been so unguarded.
The museums find it extremely difficult to devote sufficient resources to giving the public good access to art and at the same time securing it. You can't, for example, have an alarm system which shuts all the doors as soon as a picture is disturbed, because if that had been a bomb, then you need to let people out. So the contradictions between access and security mean that good security is expensive. And although this museum had been given additional money to improve their security, they hadn't had time to spend it. And even if they had, an armed robbery of this sort might well be able to take things out of a U.S. museum.
And I gather a lot of the security protection that is in place around the world is to protect paintings from, somebody who wants to rip it for some reason or spray paint on it.
That's correct. In terms of the number of claims, museums have far more claims for damage, fire, flood or accidental damage or deliberate damage, than they do from theft. Clearly, if you have an item which is stolen, which is very valuable, that may be a big sum of money. But in terms of numbers, it's small.
Mary, I'm sorry?
Could you comment on the pricelessness and his role in the art world?
Yes, although I'm not an expert on expressionism, but he was the founding father, or perhaps the most influential early member of the movement. And this particular picture is very interesting because he did do four versions of it, of the Madonna. I don't think he did more than one, but there are four of the Scream. And like so much art, initially this is shocking and not well accepted by the public, and eventually it becomes extremely influential. And that has happened to artists from throughout the ages, from Leonardo da Vinci right through to the modern day. The value of these pictures becomes very difficult to establish because there are fewer and fewer of them which are ever going to be sold, because most are in museums and will never be sold again. Mm-hmm. So whether this is worth 10 or 15 or 18 million depends on a very few number of private collectors who have that sort of money, and very few museums who could afford that. So it's very difficult to calculate.
But obviously the Scream, nobody's going to resell it, at least not publicly.
Correct. We have a 15% chance of recovering pictures given 20 years. Now, that doesn't sound to be a very good probability, but we are getting more effective every year because as the art trade checks before they buy, it becomes increasingly difficult for people to sell, and then they'll probably try to surrender it.
Mary, thanks very much for the call.
Speak a little about...
We'll be back with more on art thefts after a short break. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about art theft, a bigger business than many of us realized. We invite you to join our conversation. If you're an art dealer or stealer, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Julian Radcliffe, the chairman of the Art Loss Register. He's with us from our bureau in New York. And let's get another caller on the line. Richard is with us from Davis, California.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm originally from Corpus Christi, Texas. Back in the mid to late 80s, two Picassos were stolen from our local museum, somewhat similar manner, except I think the escape vehicle was a boat. But sometime after that, Time magazine had an article about stolen artwork, and they said, or I believe, that it was legal to sell stolen art in, I believe, Switzerland. Hopefully this wasn't answered while I was calling in, but I was wondering if this is the case. And two, any idea what the Picassos are, or have they ever shown up?
It's not legal to sell stolen art in any country, but the law does give the ability for somebody who buys in good faith in most countries eventually the right to quiet enjoyment or ownership. So it's a timescale matter. If you buy, make proper inquiries, check that it's not stolen in as much as you can, then in most countries after 7 years you would become the owner. However, if it's still on our database, you'd find it very difficult to sell it. We would exert a claim, even though legally we wouldn't have a strong position, and we could probably compromise and get the item back. So, generally speaking, a good picture can be got back by its owner if they're prepared to pay something, even if it's 10 years later. In the case of your two Picassos stolen from Corpus Christi, I will check on the database and let you know whether we found them or whether we've had any trace of them.
The database, is this something that Richard or other interested listeners could check? Is there a website?
There is a website, but unfortunately you can't access that. And the reason for that is that if we make the database available to the public, unfortunately the major user becomes the criminal, who tries to work out what's on the database and then to try and outwit us by selling the item somewhere where we're not searching. So anybody who submits a search, a dealer or a private owner or somebody who's going to buy, that search is carried out by our staff, and they have to sign a contract and say who you are before you get the answer.
Okay. Richard, we'll ask Mr. Radcliffe to check on your Picassos and send us the answer. If you listen to our letter segment next Monday, we'll have the answer for you.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Let's go now to Emmanuel. Emmanuel's from Chicago, Illinois.
Thanks, Neil.
Hi, you're on the air.
My question is that, is there a record of this kind of act being an inside work? And is there a possibility that this could be one? I mean, like, can we go back in history to see whether thefts before it's been an inside work, and if this is one? Possible.
Mm-hmm. Julian Radcliffe?
It's fair to say that the great majority of thefts from museums are not by people breaking in with guns, but are by unexplained losses from the storeroom or when items are being checked or moved. And many of those, sadly, involve inside work by members of the curatorial staff or the maintenance staff. And often those losses can be concealed for a long period of time from the trustees or owners of the museum. But in this case, I would think a armed robbery with inside collusion is very unlikely.
You destroyed one of our favorite myths of the eccentric collector in his Batcave, watching these paintings. But what about the other myth, the gentleman thief? I mean, are these gangs, or is this one guy sneaking in at night and making off with stuff?
There is no such thing as a gentleman thief. There are, however, some very sophisticated individuals who know quite a bit about art and who go round galleries and to the fairs looking for the opportunities of stealing items, particularly small items that they can put under their coat. There are also fraudsters who ask for pictures to be delivered to smart addresses on approval, which they say they're going to pay for. They make a down payment, and then the next thing is that the picture disappears.
Emmanuel, thanks very much for the phone call. It was, we mentioned earlier, one of the other versions of Edvard Munch's painting The Scream was stolen back in 1994. It was taken from the National Gallery of Oslo on the opening day of the Oslo Winter Olympic Games. Tony Russell was involved in the recovery of that painting. He's currently the head of operations for Art Recovery Limited, which is part of the James Mintz Group, and he joins us now by phone from London. Good to speak with you.
Good evening.
So we heard how The Scream was stolen on Sunday. How was it stolen back in 1994?
That was slightly less violent in those days, and it was stolen as a result of a burglary overnight. Fortunately, no firearms were used in that offence.
I gather the thieves left a postcard.
Yes, they did. I think the Norwegian police dealt with that.
It said, thanks for the poor security?
Yes. And security, of course, is always a problem, as we've already heard.
Yes. And how was the painting recovered?
As per usual, it became an embarrassment to the thieves. And at some stage, they approached the Norwegian government with a view to ransoming it back. And the Norwegian government took the correct view that they would not pay a ransom. Meanwhile, New Scotland Yard, and at that time I was attached to the Arts and Antiques Squad at New Scotland Yard, offered their services to the agencies in Norway,
mm-hmm.
and they accepted that offer, and we put together an undercover sting whereby a police officer posing as a third party who was willing to purchase the screen back was put into Norway and negotiated for its return. And after a period of about 3 weeks, fortunately, they managed to get it together. That is, they managed to get the picture in one place and the money in another. And the picture was seized and the three Norwegians arrested.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, after that, things took a turn for the worse, in so much of that, the laws in Norway precluded much of the evidence obtained being used in the subsequent trial, and the three persons concerned were not convicted.
You said that the art became an embarrassment to the thieves, and you said that's usually the case. What did you mean by that?
When one steals a piece like The Scream, which is valued in millions and probably now one of the best-known pictures throughout the world, it is absolutely impossible to sell that anywhere, despite the international nature of the art market. And whatever continent one goes to, whatever dealer one approaches, no one wants to be involved in that sort of picture because there is no marketplace for it. Consequently, they are left with very little alternative other than to offer to ransom it back either to the government or the gallery, or to make efforts to try and claim the reward that may be offered. Both of those routes are dangerous for the criminals. And the only other route that they can take is to try and trade it amongst the criminal fraternity, perhaps for drugs, perhaps for forged currency, something like that. But of course, for the more sophisticated criminals, they also don't want to become involved in an object that's being sought worldwide and for which there is no marketplace.
Julian Radcliffe, is that picture of these famous paintings, at least as white elephants, is that accurate, do you think?
It is to a very great degree. But, for example, we got back a Cezanne, which had been sitting, worth 18 million. So it was a very valuable picture, which had been sitting in a bank vault, I believe, for 21 years before it was surrendered. That was an embarrassment to whoever had it, but in the end they did surrender it, although they did try to get a payment from us, but we didn't provide one.
Let's get another caller on the line. Gloria is with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Gloria.
Oh, okay. I work for a major worldwide insurer, not necessarily with claims of this high value, but it is just stunning to me that there was no insurance for this painting, even if, especially when I guess the excuse for it was it's priceless. Well, you know, the Twin Towers can be insured for $4 billion, $5 billion. This painting certainly could have. And the value of insurance isn't just in the and the insurance company paying out, because hell has no fury like an insurance company that just paid out $2 or $3 billion or $500 million on a painting. I mean, more resources would be brought to bear to recover this painting than, with all due respect to the Norwegian law enforcement, if a payout by an insurance company was made.
Especially if the investigation takes many years. Insurance companies never rest.
Exactly.
Tony Russell, what about Gloria's point?
I think you always hit the difficulty of the cost of the insurance. And I don't know how many pieces there are in the Munch Museum, but I think it runs into thousands. And, of course, the costs become prohibitive. And Julian Radcliffe will be able to discuss insurance with you better than I can. But certainly you find most galleries have problems in raising sufficient funds to pay for insurance cover for theft.
Yeah. Well, they could. They wouldn't necessarily have to insure the item itself. They could just have a script policy, and I won't get too far into this, but they could just have a script policy that would reimburse them for costs associated with trying to get the painting back.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then, of course, there you get into, do they want to pay a ransom and that other issue. But just the thought that something so valuable has, like, absolutely no insurance, it's like saying, you know, my house is just worth, it's priceless to me, therefore I'm not going to insure it.
Well, Julian Radcliffe, thanks, Gloria. What about, they say you know more about the insurance part of this than he does.
Yeah, but Tony is right. The reason why so many museums in Europe are not insured is because they are either owned by the government, which doesn't, on the whole, insure anything, or they may be owned by a local council or municipality, and they cannot afford to pay the premiums to insure. Now, you may challenge that by saying they could have a policy which would just pay out for the first £5 million of any loss, and that would be less expensive than insuring £500 million of pictures. But if they did start insuring, it's very difficult for them to know where to stop. And they have enough trouble, many of these museums, paying the wages and keeping the roof leak-proof. And therefore, premiums tend to be something that suffers. In America, you have museums which are much better endowed, are still buying works of art, and have enough money to insure themselves, and they're private, so that they have an incentive to do so.
Mm-hmm. What about another issue, the statute of limitations? As you mentioned, most places around the world, after 7 years or so, the statute of limitations runs out. Should that be extended for multi-million dollar thefts like these?
The law is changing, or certainly the practice is changing. If you take the Holocaust, for example, stolen pictures from the Holocaust legally belong to the people who now have them. The statute of limitations would be in the favour of the current holder. But in fact, many of those pictures are being surrendered and compromised. And the reason for that is that once they're on the database, it becomes very difficult to sell them. Therefore, if you want to sell them, you've got to do a deal with the people who are claiming them. And that principle is extending through into stolen pictures as well. And the law is changing so that if somebody buys and doesn't check the database or exert due diligence, they won't have rights to it. In the same way, if somebody doesn't register a loss and make an effort to get it back, then they'll lose their rights. So the law is changing.
We're speaking with Julian Radcliffe of Art Loss Register and Tony Russell of Art Recovery Limited, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk now with Moji, who's on the line with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Two quick points. One is I'm wondering how Howard Dean feels about the screen being stolen. And the other point, which is a serious one, is I'm a poet, and my poetry is described as expressionistic. And expressionism came out of essentially protesting. And I'm wondering, given that, for example, right now the rate of extinction of living species on this planet is one per hour, to what extent do your experts feel, and you feel, that this may be a profound act of protest?
Let me put it to Tony Russell. How much does politics, whether it is that particular aspect of politics or not, play in art theft?
Well, of course, there was the Chagall theft from the Jewish Museum in New York that was done by a political group, which I believe was a demonstration demanding peace in Israel. In relation to the scream, I think if that had been a political statement or demonstration, then there would have been a statement issued within 24 hours. So I think in relation to the scream, it's in all probability purely a straightforward theft for personal gain by the crooks.
Moji, you would expect if these were expressionists, they would have expressed themselves.
Well, no, well, they would, except that they would express themselves in an intelligent way. They would wait for a few days until all the propaganda subsides that there are thieves, and then they may come forward, especially given that it was such a brazen act of in daylight. So this is like an expressionism par excellence, in that they may be, you know, some group that has some, I don't want to call it political necessarily, but some protest. For example, again, the idea that we are losing one species per hour on this planet, and that is cause for profound screaming. And so they may be waiting for a few days until all the speculation about their being criminal is done, and then they come and say, by the way, we did it in order to scream about how suicidal humans are at this point in history.
We shall have to see. Moji, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
We just have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to ask both of you about a subject that I guess we've been talking around, but that is the issue of ransom. Ransom is sometimes paid, Julian Radcliffe?
Very seldom. I used to run the company that undertook most of the ransom negotiations for personnel around the world for the major multinational companies insured by Lloyd's, and we did over 800 ransom negotiations or kidnap negotiations over the years. And the rules that we agreed with the governments were very clear, which is that most laws in most countries allow people to, as it were, break the law if they are trying to save life. And if you can prove that there is a real threat to life, then it may be justified under police control and supervision to make a payment. But I very much doubt that it is justified to make a payment for the return of a picture where you're doing it directly to those involved in the theft.
And Tony Russell, we'll give you the last 30 seconds.
Yes, I would agree with Julian that ransom situations are frowned on throughout the world. It does, of course, occasionally happen. And you'll see pictures that reappear and are rehung in galleries with very little publicity. But it is frowned upon. The Norwegian government, on the last occasion when the screen was stolen, adamantly refused to pay any ransom. And I've absolutely no doubt they will adopt the same policy on this occasion.
Tony Russell, thanks very much for being with us. Tony Russell, head of operations for Art Recovery Limited, which is part of the James Mintz Group. He was with us on the phone from London. Julian Radcliffe, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Julian Radcliffe is chairman of the Art Loss Register and joined us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, a look at how the Navy awards its combat medals. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.